Welcome to the Wellbeing Rebellion, the podcast that's changing workplace cultures for good. We're your hosts, Ngazi Weller
and Obehi Alafoje.
Let's get this rebellion started. Welcome back, Rebels, to another episode of the Wellbeing Rebellion, where today we are going to be talking about inclusive leadership and the importance of fostering a sense of belonging for your employees in the workplace. Today, we live in a really polarized society. It's a very them and us. There is divisiveness and controversy everywhere we go. And it's sometimes difficult to have the good old-fashioned middle ground. But as leaders, we have to manage teams who are often multicultural, who have different experiences of the world, who may have different opinions, and we all have to be pulling in the same direction. And the secret to doing so successfully in a world which is as polarized as we are in now is to create an environment that is inclusive, right? It's being able to foster a sense of belonging for each individual, regardless of who they are or where they come from, that they can identify and empathize with something in your business's priorities and objectives that makes them feel like they can make a contribution that is valued. And that is the role of a leader today. And that's not just because it's something that would be nice to have in a moral or fair society, but because actually, as a leader, your job is to enable each employee to be as productive as they can within the organization. And research shows that organizations with inclusive cultures outperform those who have less inclusive in cultures, those who are very monocultural, if you like, or where there is such a them and us. They outperform in all of the key metrics: innovation, employee engagement, retention, creativity, all those kinds of things which push us from being, as my son would say, mid to excellent. Yeah?
It's important to also note something, that all the stats will say things like, oh, 33% more likely to outperform, 21% here, 41% there, and which is positive because you can see it. But then there's the other thing they said, well, so that means the other ones who 60-something percent are doing okay then. So, like, of people who are not fostering belonging or feeling like their places could be inclusive, I also making money. I also making profit. Like, I also getting on there. So, in other words, a toxic culture, a toxic organization can still make money. So we're not even disputing that at all. What we are saying, though, eventually it won't be sustainable, especially because of how our generations are. We're different. As we get through the generations, they're different and they require different things. They require more input from leaders and they tend to vote with their feet and their money. So eventually, we might have the old organizations who probably were benefiting from toxic leadership that somehow still were on a roll. They've not lost money. I'm thinking about the organization you work for. Gotcha. I don't think they've lost, you know what I mean? They're not crying. But they have, to be fair, they're no longer number one in there. But yeah, so it does have consequences. I'm just saying that I can see how it might be slow and people are like, well, why can I do all this stuff if all I'm gaining is an extra 33%? A 33% gain on your profitability, on your employee engagement and being able to retain people and recruit people, there's no small number. It's massive, to make massive implications on things, I think.
The thing is, how long? We're talking about longevity here. So, and that might be some of the issue. My daughter was showing me a fact which said human memory is now shorter than a goldfish's, which, if true, is shocking. It's probably not. It's probably a TikTok fact, but she was saying human memory is now 8 seconds and a goldfish is 9 or something like that. I think that's incredible. Attention span, rather. And we live in such a short-termist, we want everything now, We want to see results now. Shareholders expect quick returns. So that is how we invest our energy. We focus our strategies and our tactics on quick turnarounds. But the long-term implications of that are negative. So you may be able to, in order, in a pinch, to get over a particularly challenging resource time, force the existing employees that are able to do the job to work extra long hours. This is just an example. Ask everyone to stay late, pull together. This is something we've got to do. We just got to get through this. You can do that in the short term. If you keep doing that, the long-term implication is everybody's productivity goes down, people start looking for other jobs, and you end up in an even bigger mess. And it's the same thing with any strategy that you employ where it comes to your people. If you're thinking about long-term gains, long-term competitiveness, long-term profitability and success, then inclusion is the only way that you can win. It's the only way that you can have that competitive advantage that says, regardless of what's happening in the economy, regardless of what's happening in the jobs market, we will always be the number one choice because we make people feel like they belong. And because they feel like they belong, they will voluntarily work that bit harder, bring their A game.
And in some cases, be prepared to take a pay cut.
Exactly.
So you don't get people volunteering to take a pay cut if they don't feel they belong there and they're part of that system, part of that family, if I'm going to use that term.
We're preaching to the choir here in that most people understand that inclusion is important, but what they don't know is, first of all, what inclusion really means. Like, am I inclusive if I just don't say anything about people's strange to me habits, behaviors, customs, cultures, whatever? Is that inclusive just by saying nothing and not being divisive? Or do I have to do something more? Am I inclusive if I just have a pride badge on during Pride Month? Is that inclusion? I think that's one of the questions or challenges. And the other one is, well, okay, if that's not what inclusion means, then how do I demonstrate that I am an inclusive leader?
Yeah, how do I do it? And I think that's the issue. There's a lot of, like you say, a lot of people listening to this podcast, a lot of the sort of roundtables and HR, we speak to a lot of them, there's loads. So we're, like you say, we're preaching to the choir, already converted, they know it's important. I suppose what we're hoping to do in this podcast is talk about strategies that we could do to help foster belonging in the workplace. Because you might know what it is you need to do, but you may not know exactly how. And there are many hows. And I hope to think that that's good news. There are many ways in which you can do that with your organization, because it depends on the size of your organization, what your organization priorities are, what leadership training and how trained your leaders are so far in some of those topics, whether or not DEI is the in front of that priority, they would determine what strategies you might have to use first or second or third, and also the type of tactics that you might use to be able to get things over the line and get people buy in. A lot of it is talking to your people, really. I think a lot of companies know that, a lot of HR people, leaders know that, but I don't think they're talking to the people as much as they think they are, is what I would say here. So hopefully, in this podcast, we're going to talk about, okay, what are the key insights that you ought to consider so that you are moving along in fostering belonging in the workplace? And know that it's not a zero-sum game, because it's not like, oh, we've ticked it now. It's not one of those. This is all journey and urban flow based on what's going on for the organization, what's going on for the least senior leaders in the organization, and of course, whether or not you're able to attract new talent to your organization or not. So these are the things that we're going to talk about. So the first point is around inclusive leadership itself. In other words, knowing that your leaders must be inclusive. They must be inclusive. They must know how to active listen to diverse perspective, diverse people, diverse voices in their teams. They have to value those differences. They have to know one voice does not prioritize another. They have to actively advocate for fairness and equity. This is their key role. It's who they are. So who are your managers being? So to do that, and if you cannot say that the majority of your managers can do this naturally, then they will require some level of training to help them do that. Active listening isn't easy to do. Not when people want to jump in and say their thoughts and everybody got an opinion, right? So listening is a very difficult art to master. But there is an art nevertheless, which means they can learn. So that's one aspect of it. So to foster belonging in the workplace, we need to look at your leader, your line manager. What skills have they got that demonstrate that they can, they listen to their people, they value other people's input, right? And they are going to help you, HR and DEI, to advocate for fairness and equity when you can't see them.
And here I am, I'm sitting here thinking those thoughts, those intrusive thoughts where I sometimes go, shut up, and guys, shut up. Yeah, because I don't know whether or not to say the piece or just
say it. If it's not right, we'll edit it out.
No, because this is what I'm thinking. I think there is absolutely no DEI lead or HRD who doesn't say to their leaders, you need to be inclusive. You must actively listen. I don't think there's any organization now that doesn't, at least on paper, recognize the importance of inclusive leadership and training and upskilling for this. And yet it's still not happening. And this is my thing. Why is it not happening? And I think that's because of a number of factors. First of all, we have to be completely frank and say, inclusivity is not, I don't think, the human default, right? Our human default isn't to go and find people who are not like us or any of our friends and say, I'm going to go against my nature and make sure that you understand that I value you for who you are. We don't tend to do that. The other thing is, we also don't know that we are not doing that. This just sounds very, there's a lot of tautology in this. What I mean is, unconscious bias is unconscious. So we don't know that we are actually treating people differently because of their differences. We think we're treating them differently for valid reasons that we have managed to tell ourselves are justified, which isn't true. So people will be saying, I am an inclusive leader, and yet they may be managing teams where not everyone agrees. So the challenge I'd say is, if you are in a leadership position, how do you know you're being inclusive? How do you know when you're not? Are you finding out? Are you asking the question?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, which brings me to that, the idea that, we'll say, oh yeah, how do you know that you're actively listening and all of that stuff? Now, as a therapist and a psychologist, I had to train how to do that. Like you said, Ngozi, spot on. It's not a natural default for us to prioritize others. Not really. So even when we prioritize others, it's to do with us. So there is a skill set. I had to learn how to do this. I have to learn it with practice and imagine having clients talking at you or patients talking at you, and they have to catch what they're saying. But because it's not about me, it became easier. This is not my story, this is not for me. I'm not trying to get promoted on based on what that client is saying to me. You see what I mean? But as a leader, I am trying to get promoted and get my bonus based on what my staff is saying or not saying. So I have to prioritize myself. So it's a skill set. So those people who are thinking, how do I do that? There are workshops for that, how to actively listen. And so that's the skill. So I just wanted to just say that. The other point is around this whole psychological safety, because that's the other thing. To foster a sense of belonging, people must feel psychologically safe. And that's a word that got banded so many times. We even us say it a lot. But it's the foundation of belonging. In other words, I have to feel safe enough to put myself at risk to express my ideas, my thoughts, any concern that I may have, whether or not I disagree or agree with my manager and all of that, or disagree with my other colleagues, is important. That I can do that and not feel that I'm going to be punished or embarrassed or belittled, basically. So to do that, a leader can do this. And to be fair, in my opinion, psychological safety is the thing that a leader does have some control over, much more than an organization itself, because it's a massive ship to turn around. But a leader managing a team of 6 or 12 can create it with that team, because it includes intention. It's being able to say to the people, I might get annoyed if you say something I don't like, right? But I'm only just annoyed because I'm just being called out. It doesn't stop you, shouldn't stop you from saying it. I will listen in the end. That is a leader taking responsibility. They're not pretending that it didn't hurt or the pushback didn't hurt. But the idea is knowing, whatever we've got to say today, whatever ideas you come up to solve this problem, they are no stupid ideas. We will listen to them, we will consider them, and then we will prioritize the ideas we're going to take forward. That is still a skill a leader must do. In every meeting, in every interaction they're having with their team members, because that team must believe it's okay to do so, so they don't make mistakes. So we talk about, yes, people know it's important, but how? How are they doing that? So what are the exercises that your leaders can use in teams to be able to exercise that comfortability? Because it's not comfortable. And just because you're creating a psychologically safe space, again, not a zero-sum game either. It's a journey, and it doesn't mean not without consequences, okay? But it just means boundary. What are we agreeing? What are mistakes within our realm? What are non-negotiable? In other words, it's a completely violation of what we've agreed or what the organization have agreed to do. In which case, you kind of know you violated it. There's no mistakes about that. That's the leader's job, to be able to create that, so the people know where they stand. And it is different from trust. Because trust, I trust you, Ngozi, because I know you. We're family. I trust you implicitly, right? That's it. But it's possible to trust someone to have safety in the team, but not trust the person in there because you just met them. Like, I joined today. I don't know you all. I don't trust you all. I don't know you people. But there's something about how you're interacting with me and what you as a leader have said to me that allowed me to see I might be safe here. I might belong here. Then I now know, I can say my thoughts. I can say what I'm feeling. But I still don't trust you. I don't know you. So to me, it's a bit different. So a leader can definitely create this one. They don't need to wait till their own line manager creates it or the next line manager creates it. There's a problem if they don't, that it will fall down eventually. But for a line, if you're a line manager or manager listening to this now, and you know you have your team, you don't know what your above is doing, know that you can start creating this. It does take intention, and it does make you need to talk to that team to say, how can we make sure no one is scared to say what they need to say here? What do we need to do to make sure that everybody in this room can bring their ideas, can bring concerns of what's going on at home, that lets us know why your productivity has dropped, and we will not judge you. We would actively try to help you.
And I think it goes beyond just what we say. So actions speak a lot louder. So you can say we agree to these things as a team. We agree that it's safe for you to bring even your craziest ideas. You can bring your whole self, whatever. But we have to make sure we back that up with everything that we do. And that includes your systems of, I don't want to say punishment and reward, but sanction and reward. So any member of the team who goes against what you've agreed is required has to be treated or pulled back into line by you as the leader. And members of the team who go the extra mile to create that sense of inclusion, psychological safety, trust, whatever you want to call it, gets rewarded for it, so that you are positively reinforcing behaviors. And that's sometimes where I've seen in workplaces the psychological safety contract being broken. I like to think of it as a contract that you as the leader has with each individual employee in your team and with the team in general, is when you say these things and then you allow another member of the team to undermine that agreement and they get away with it scot-free, it means that you don't mean what you say. So that's a good thing. But I like the idea of having a team meeting that's just about, especially when you have resource changes or role changes or strategy shifts, whatever it is, if there's a significant change, bringing your team together as a group and making that shift from group to team by agreeing what the contract for working is, and not just, okay, number of hours or what the roles are, but what people can expect from each other, what they will and will not tolerate, how they like to work, not just what they like to work on. And that's something that, yeah, every team leader can do.
It's also why when we do this work with leaders and organizations to support senior leaders, we always talk about things like personality profile and tests, simply because it's a very good opening for how people really are different and the assumptions that we can make about each other. And I think that's important because it's not one conversation you're going to keep having with your team that creates a psychological safety. It's multiple of saying the same thing over and over again, of them being this, oh, they're the big idea, or no, someone's idea didn't get taken up, but how the rest of the team managed that and supported that. So that's what's really important here. So that's why I'm saying, do your managers have that? Have they been taught? Because this is not something that is innate. And I just need to, and if you're thinking that you just have good managers who do what they require, I've always said that again, being a nice person isn't a skill set. That's a lovely personality that manager has. And like you called out, Ngadi, it's not your natural instinct to value somebody else's stuff. It's your conscious, it's you deciding, I'm going to see that. It's you deciding that in your team, there'll be people whose personalities clash. And their voice is just as valid, even when you don't like them that much.
Yeah. And it's hard to do. It's hard to do.
Yeah, but it's practice. Because there'd be a time when I would have to have client or patient in the time who I did not like. For example, treating a rapist. Why would I like this guy? Treating somebody who exposed themselves on a train. Same train that I have to go home on. Right? So there is a level of, but being able to distance myself to say, right, this person is not what they did. Right? It's not what they did. This person had ideas, feelings, dreams that somehow had been hidden, and all we can see is the crime. So I would work a lot of criminal justice cases in my past life. And being able to shift my thought process from, I'm no really better than you, I'm just a bit luckier than you right now, right? I'm no really better than you. You just have a very weird childhood that I didn't have to pass through that had resulted in you having this behavior. But I still have to deal with my, I still don't like this guy. But that's something I had to take to supervision to discuss, because their biases, So when we talk about there's conscious bias and there's unconscious ones, and we need to know that they affect how inclusive we will make others feel or whether we would exclude them to get comfortable for ourselves or to have some level of comfortability. If I can send a problematic staff, I'm going to use it as one. So if I can put somebody in a different team, just so I don't have to see their face every 5 days, that's to make myself comfortable. So I have to now deal with, why am I avoiding this person? What's this about? The bias that I feel like person A isn't just quite, not quite the right fit. For all reasons, oh, well, he's not really that engaged. He's not really showing this, he's got this expertise. But okay, where did he not do that? But then the other person B, somehow, even when they sneeze, it all sounds funny. Right? So we must know there's a preference to person B, then preference to person A. Why am I feeling like that? What is that about? Now, this part, I don't expect the leader to work it out themselves. I do expect them to have coaching to work that out, because it's what I had to do as a clinician, but also as the manager of a team, to say, I got to understand why I'm not getting on with this person or quite like them. And for me to unearth some of that, this takes work. You don't just get it on the one day. And so that brings me to unbiased, or just unconscious bias training. We don't work for 2 hour, 1 hour. It's enough information, because I say in terms of awareness, that's great. But the underneath work is painful. It's not nice. And there's a level of shame that comes with that in some cases. But it does allow you to take action. Something that allows you to better your instinct. That makes sense. So conscious bias, great. Address it. Important to address it. But how do you address unconscious bias in the workplace? It's a leader's job to do that. I don't think I need to put it on HR, because HR doesn't know what that leader is thinking in their heads. Really. But I do agree that in terms of recruitment, for example, is all the processes and practices for recruitment is the job to eliminate as best as possible, so that person A or person B doesn't get hired over person A just because a leader felt connected to them.
There's also the obvious, which is how we recognize, acknowledge, and celebrate the differences that we all share. So regardless of whether you've come to terms with your unconscious bias and decided that I'm going to do my very best to go against my natural instinct, or whether you have none, it is about making sure that you are public with the fact that you support the things that make the individuals in your team distinct, different, and therefore special. So whether that be their neurotype or their culture, their ethnicity, their sexual preference, or whatever it is, that you are supporting them in a public form. So whether that is, okay, I mean, the best example I can give is when I was in junior school, primary school. So I grew up in Saudi Arabia, which is not where everybody goes to when they think about a diverse workplace or diverse culture. But I did. I grew up in an international school in Saudi. And so my first experiences of racism came quite later on in my life, not till I moved to the UK. And that's because in this international school, which was a British school, they consciously wanted to breed a sense of belonging and create a sense of inclusion for the some 30 plus nationalities represented in that primary school, right? So they would go over the top with their public demonstration of support for everybody's cultures. And I loved it. And I'm not just looking at back with rose-tinted glasses. It formed who I am. It formed me being this more, some would say liberal, I'd say just loving person who is open to difference, because as a child, I knew that celebrating different foods, music, literature, national anthems, dress was a point of pride and not of shame. So how do we do that in the context of the workplace? And it has to be something where it's not just, well, it's Pride Week, so we'll do it for Pride Week, and then we will never mention it again. It has to be, how do I make sure that every week is effectively Pride Week or Neurodiversity Awareness Week or Mental Health Awareness Week? How can I make it that without having to adhere to an external calendar of events for specialist characteristics, that people know it doesn't matter what day of the week it is, if I want to come with my hair a certain way or my dress in a certain way or speak in a certain way, not, I won't just be tolerated, I will be welcomed. How are we doing that as managers? That's part of your role. And I recognize there's a lot here that we're laying at the door of the line manager. And I know that that requires support. One of the things I was trying to bite my tongue about earlier was that even though it's the responsibility of the line manager, they can't do it in isolation because it takes time and energy and effort. So we need to give them space to do that, not just the training, but the space in their diary to take time to make people feel included. And that is the responsibility of the senior leaders.
Yeah.
In how they structure the manager's role.
Yeah. And I also think that, to your point, I think that, yes, there's a lot of work for line managers to do on top of the other things that they've got to do. And not every organization has established that your job as a line manager is just to make sure your people can do great work. Some of the line managers are still doing pieces of work that they have to do on top of that. So on that note, it's having the space and time to do it. But I want to be able to challenge line managers to think about, you have more control than you think you do, more so than your team does, right? So therefore, being able to carve out manager time or quiet time or reflective time is part of the work. I don't expect you to do that at dinner time when you're with your family. It works. So whether you do that at the day's quieting or the first thing you do, or you take yourself off, I need to take myself off to the head office because that's my team. We're not at the head office. Which meant that I reduced the number of, can I have a chat with you, Obi? Can I have a question? So I reduced that. But I did that once a month, I did. But it was time for me to think about each team member, what they needed, the last supervision or one-to-one that I had with them, the bit where they say, I need help from you around this thing, or if it might have been serious situation where I needed to get my own manager to talk about how we might support someone or how we might have to bring someone up for disciplinary on the basis of poor behavior in the workplace, for example. But you do need time to think about it. And Gandhi, that's a really good point. I just feel like I have to carve the time. So line managers do have control, but it's easy to think that you don't. So create the time, then see what happens. Then let's see whether or not your manager goes, what do you need that hour for? But spend the hour being with your team in absentia. They're not in your face, but you're thinking about them. So which means the diversity piece allows you to now think, hey, let's just have a thing, everybody, we take it in turn, we're all picking dinner, where we go for dinner every Friday, for example. Everybody pick the place we're going to go for dinner, no questions asked. That way, somebody can say, I wanted to go and try a Nigerian dinner, for example, because that's not a thing that will come up in the first place. And it allows the team to experience something else. They may not like it or all like it in the end, but they might think, oh yeah, I quite like it, but not quite. It does take, it has a certain taste. You have to acquire taste to certain food. The point I'm trying to make is allow people to show you the bit they want to show you. But you have to ask, And you have to say, how about we try this? Let them be the ones that, nah, I don't think so. Or, yeah, or let's try something else instead. But it allows everybody to bring the bit they want to show, or they want to share with each other. Which is why I also like ERDs, I think. They're good at helping to celebrate the diversity of all kinds. So if you don't want anything for your team, find out what your ERDs are doing and then plug yourself into some of them.
The critical thing about this is that it's difficult for you to do it in isolation. And when you were talking, it made me think about one practical way in which organizations with zero money can get that. And it's, we need somebody to point out our blind spots, right? So why don't you either buddy up, or if preferable, partner up with a few leaders or managers in your kind of, at your level, but in a different department or team, and come up with peer group coaching circles where you can then not just idea swap about specific issues that you're going through with your employees, but also we need someone who we trust to challenge us.
Obviously, when we do our leadership program, we do have what we call strategic cohorts. So this is what Ngozi is talking about, where it's already part of, built into the program, that cohort are being pods and they will connect throughout the period of the training or program. But actually, you can do this yourself. When I go back to when I was a line manager and a leader, it was lonely to some degree, but in a region where we work, that's in South London, we had a few other managers that we would meet once a month or once in 2 months or whatever, just like you say, to discuss challenges, what we're doing well, because we were peers. We needed to bounce off. And I needed to bounce off from the person in North London, because it's not the same experience that they were seeing, or the same thing, challenges they had in the clinic where I was in Lewisham or when I was in Westminster. So therefore, hearing a different perspective. So if in your organization you have head of department, they're obviously running different regions, different areas of expertise. Therefore, it makes sense that they can connect in that way. You can't force it though. So it has to be, you as a line manager, I suppose me and Ngozi are talking to you directly. There's no reason why you can't organize a strategic cohort for you and some of your peers to get together once a month for an hour, just to be able to think about what my challenge is, what am I struggling with, what do I need help with, and being able to prepare for those calls. They're free, nobody has to pay extra or anything for that, but you can support each other in that way and be each other's blind spotter. I come up with another word, blind spotter. Is that in the dictionary? I'm going to check.
It is not in the dictionary, do not need to care. I just think that's a practical takeaway. You guys can have that one free, use that. And then if you're at the higher level, so at strategic level, I'm talking to you, HR, I'm talking to you, DEI lead, I'm talking to you, COOs and CEOs. Listen, the key thing is inclusion is not skin deep. It isn't just about, well, we've got a lot of people from different races in the team, they're all inclusive. No, inclusion goes beyond just box ticking or numbers. It's about the feeling that employees have. So I challenge you to find out, what is that feeling? And what are you doing in your organization to empower your line managers to be able to create that sense of inclusion or psychological safety within their teams? That's it. Did you have another point that you wanted to make?
Just one last point around making sure your employees use their voices more. Like, in just because you send that survey or you have that suggestion box, you can go one further, try and do regular check-in, try and do what do you call it, on the spot check, knowing just when you have an office to walk around and chat to people. So it's a great way, especially now we're back in the office a bit more, that you could do that, just talking to all the people, getting their thoughts on things and letting them share what they want to share, because it just gives you sort of the random conversation you might have by this on the staircase or on the lift. these are important for conversation, but you want to encourage your employees to use their voice often. You don't have to wait until some survey comes around once every 6 months. They can just talk, see you and talk. And that takes time. It takes, again, building that creative psychological safety that it's okay for people to just share ideas and their thoughts, and you take them seriously. You wouldn't just discount them. So focus groups, I love focus groups because you can either way for people to bounce off each other in terms of things. One person thinks it, the other person thinks it. I was thinking about it, afraid to say it. So I love that. So where possible, do more of those so that you get a feel for what your people really are thinking. And then you can now provide solutions to help them feel even more sense of belonging.
This is what Obi and I do. It's our bread and butter, if you like, is helping organisations to create workplaces that enable good mental health and well-being for everybody. That is, that focuses on fostering a sense of psychological safety within that organisation. If you want to know how we can help your organisation, please have a look at our website. We'll put the link in the show notes. We'll direct you to the programs that we run, the workshops that you could hire us for, the talks that we do, and do reach out. This is something that's important, not just for your business, but for, if you like, creating a fairer, more equitable society. And if you are a well-being rebel, I know that's something that you want to do. So please don't hesitate to have a look and see if this is something you want our support for. We'll also drop contact details so you can be in touch to book a quick call and we can talk about the way we can support you in your business. So, Rebels, we'll catch you next time. I hope you enjoyed us spitballing on the importance of inclusive leadership and you got a couple of pearls of wisdom to take away with you this week. We'll speak to you again soon.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wellbeing Rebellion.
If you liked what you just heard, please share it with your colleagues, follow us on LinkedIn, the link will be in the show notes, and generally show us some love.
We want to build a whole army of fellow rebels who want to create positive workplaces for everyone. Will you join the rebellion? See you next time.